American songwriter, my brother-in-law Sean Olbs of the Eiffels was able to talk to Lindsey Stirling over Zoom video. Lindsey Stirling talks about where she grew up and how she got into music. She talks about learning violin at a very early age, being very into dance and violin. She wanted to do both. She tells us about her YouTube channel, her time on America's Got Talent, and her brand new song, Lose You Now. You can watch the interview with Lindsey Stirling and Sean Olbs of the Eiffels on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Lindsey Stirling.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a huge artist today. I'm super happy to have her, and I'm excited to hear your story. Lindsey Stirling, everybody.
Woo!
Lindsey, what's going on? I know you just got off another interview, so you're a busy woman.
Oh, trying to stay busy these days. That's a feat in itself, you know?
Yeah, it is. Really is. Finding things to do. Finding things you can still do.
That's what most of my days are like. It's like, what can I create today for myself to do? Yeah.
Yeah. I heard a great quote the other day. It was something like, some people hide when there's a windstorm and some people build windmills. So I loved that for this moment.
I do love that.
Me too. So you are building windmills, still working, still doing lots of press and everything, still putting out music. And you just put out a beautiful, moving new song called Lose You Now. And I was listening to it this week, and I know there's a very emotional story behind that. But before we get into what you've been into recently, would you mind jumping in the time machine and taking us back to when Lindsey first got into music and just, you know, let us know how that went?
Oh, gosh. Do you want the beginning?
Yeah, let's do it.
Like, picked up a violin. Okay, we'll breeze through that real quick.
Okay.
But, you know, I begged for violin lessons when I was really little. Like, I know that's pretty unique, because when I was about 5 years old, I just started asking my parents to play the violin because my parents loved classical music. They would play it in our home. You know, we went to some of these like free community orchestra concerts when I was a kid. And, you know, so I saw that the violinist was the star. I was no dummy. So after begging for a while, when I was 6 years old, my parents, you know, started me in violin lessons. And I played classical violin up until I was, you know, through high school. And I was about to go to college to study music. And I was going to be a performance major. And I actually joined a pageant to try to earn money for college. Like, this was my, all right, I'm going to win my way to college by trying to win this pageant, because I needed some funds. And
were you low key kind of like, you know, were you like, I actually have a real talent, like a good talent during the talent portion of this too? Like, where was that in the back of your mind? Like, I'm going to blow them away with this, this violin thing at the same time.
Yes. Well, that was the funny thing, is they came to like our school and they like, you know, were like, we would love, you know, there's money involved. And they said all the things that you had to do. And I was like, I actually think I could, like, I didn't consider myself a pageant girl, but I was like, I think I could actually do well at some of those things. And, you know, so I did think that, but then I get there and it was the Junior Miss pageant, which is, anyways, there was a lot of really talented girls in it. And there was like five other violinists that were very good.
Ah.
I remember being like, okay, well, gosh, dang it. And at this time, all I did was classical violin. Uh-huh. And so I thought to myself, how can I stand out from these like five other violinists, let alone there was like pianists and there was like a harpist, like all these classical musicians. And so I was like, I was talking to my mom about it. I'm like, I wish I could just do something fun. And she goes, well, why don't you? Why don't you make the violin fun? If you're, you know, she was kind of annoyed with me for complaining about all these like classical pieces she'd paid so much for me to be able to play. And she's like, well, then make it fun. And I was like, oh, you're right. So I got some friends to record some like guitar and drums, and I wrote a rock song for the violin. And I, instead of wearing like a gown, I went out there with like a punky little outfit, and I decided I'm gonna jump around and like kick my little legs and play this rock song. And at the time I was not a dancer like at all. And so it literally was just like kind of kicking my legs and like, you know, winking at the audience and trying to just be almost like funny like about it, like kind of comical about this routine.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, I did end up winning the whole thing. And
wow.
But most importantly, aside from like winning money for college, I remember being like, what just happened? I had so much fun out there jumping around and doing this routine that it made me think like, I need to figure out how to make the violin fun for me more. Like the audience was smart. It was a different reaction I'd ever had from an audience. Like, you know, they weren't just impressed. They were entertained. Mm-hmm. And anyways, it changed the way I thought about violin. I decided, you know, and that kind of spurred this search for like, how can I make the violin like fit me? Because I realized I had always fit the violin and now I wanted it to fit me. So that was kind of the beginning of that journey.
Yeah. So that was kind of like a light bulb moment where you were like, hey, obviously I wouldn't have guessed there would be five other violinists in a pageant, but
right?
so maybe it's more common to the quote unquote masses than you might think. But I feel like you're figuring out how to make it mainstream, how to make, you know, the average teenager think, hey, violin's cool. You know, even maybe, you know, it's a beautiful instrument, especially for people who like classical music, but it's not Absolutely. Always thought of as a instrument you use in pop music. So it sounds like that kind of kicked it off. Your mom helped you a little bit with that too.
My mom did. My parents were always so supportive of not only just us chasing our dreams, but like being creative, like, and finding ways to like express yourself through like multiple outlets. Like my parents were super good at just like encouraging that in us.
Yeah.
So
you,
thanks mom and dad.
Yeah. Thanks for saying good. Well, then do it. How do I make this fun? Do it.
Yeah. Well, then make it fun.
Yeah. So you win this pageant, you get some money. Awesome. So you're actually getting paid to be a musician. Was that one of your first experiences, like actually making money from like playing music essentially? I mean, I know there are other things involved in that pageant probably, but it sounds like the music was a big part of it.
It was. The first gig I ever had was like as a teenager playing at weddings. I had a little quartet and we'd play as like the bride walked down the aisle and play at the reception, you know?
Yeah.
People still do that.
That's true. I've talked to a few artists about that. Just, you know, like, I feel like I recently got engaged. So I'm always like,
congrats.
Can we just do... Thank you. But I'm always like, can we do this but not tell them it's for a wedding? Because I feel like as soon as you say something's for a wedding, they're like, let's jack up the price like about triple, you know? So I'm always like, does that apply to musicians as well? It probably does, you know?
Oh, probably. I remember, I mean, back in high school when I was 16, I couldn't believe I was like, I'm getting $50 an hour to play at this wedding. Like, which is, I mean, pretty cheap for a quartet now that I see it in hindsight. But when you're 16 and working for
16 and minimum wage is the what most people are making. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I did have a job that I did most of the time. So when I found out, oh my gosh, I'm getting paid $50 to play my violin like for an hour. What?
Yeah. So it seems like you early on, you had these very encouraging moments because it sounds like you were already a great violinist already enough, well, at least good enough to win a pageant and also to be playing at weddings. So tell us a little bit about, you know, you get some of these initial encouraging moments. How did you take it from there to maybe somewhere a little further down the road?
Yeah. I mean, like that pageant was such a moment for me. Like I said, it was a light bulb moment, but then it was like, okay, well, there's not random variety show stages all over the place to just like go and like dance around with your violin. It's like, where could I possibly ever even do this again? You know, so I actually decided I had planned on majoring in music as a classical performance major, but I realized that, you know, that just wasn't for me and I was gonna keep trying to make the violin fit me. And so I would play with bands. I would play, you know, I started to like dabble in writing music and, you know, I just kept trying to like go anywhere I could to play. And, you know, I remember I auditioned for this college showcase. And so then I started to get gigs playing at different college campuses. Mind you, all these gigs they were grueling. They're hard because no one cares. You know, you're out there playing in some college courtyard. And yes, I was being paid to do it. Great. Mm-hmm. And I was saving the money to like make more music, but it was so thankless and it was exhausting and no one's listening. And if they are, like, you know, your sound is bad on some random speaker and like, you know, so it was like very, it was hard, you know, yeah. And it feels a little bit like those moments are like sucking the musical soul out of you. And, yeah. you know, it gets to a point where you're like, how much longer can I do this? And, you know, and here also at this time I was traveling to do these shows. So sometimes I'd be sleeping in my rental car, like trying to, you know, just trying to save the money that I was making. And I ended up eventually discovering, well, what's the biggest variety show in the world? America's Got Talent, you know, yeah. So I went on to AGT, had a horrible experience. To say the least, like it was, I mean, my musical heart broke on that show. Like I, you know, because it got built up to be like, this is going to be the greatest moment of your life. And this is your make or break. And it definitely was my break. Like I went out there and, you know, they told me I sounded like rats being strangled as I played my violin on national TV in front of like 11 million people.
Yeah.
Humiliating. Like, yeah. And I was like, there we go. That's the end for me. I cannot do that again. Like I'd already been struggling. But I was like, after that, I cannot get back on the stage again. I was like too embarrassed, to be quite honest. Like everybody saw it that I'd ever known. And so anybody that would have come to my little tiny gig would now feel sorry for me. Like, so, but there is something about that gut feeling. And I say this all the time, but, you know, and I attribute a lot of that to like God and the spirit and like just the fact that I think a lot of times we're being guided and we don't even realize it, because I could not deny that once the humiliation wore off a little bit, I knew it wasn't over. Like there was this gut feeling and this spirit that was just like, you're not done yet. Like, yeah, they said you suck and they said you're not good enough, but you know, and maybe, yeah, you weren't that great, but it was just one night. It was one performance. You can't base your entire life off of like what someone says to you in one moment based on a moment that I actually wasn't ready for. Like I wasn't good enough yet for that moment. You know, I needed to put in a lot more work, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being like, yeah, I wasn't good enough that night. And I worked really, really hard to earn the place that I have on stages now, because, you know, and thankfully I didn't do better on that show, because, you know, that comes with a whole other ball and chain, you know, if you do too well on those shows. And so anyways, I eventually discovered YouTube and it changed the game for me. We can talk more about that if you want, but
yeah, I would
that
love
was
to.
Like a
I
turning
know,
moment.
Especially since it's a catalyst. Yeah. Please do tell us about it. So, I hear you, and it's, very few people have experienced, I think what you've experienced. So it's great to hear it, because a lot of times I'm hearing these when I'm doing these interviews, artists will only, you know, they give me the highlight reel, which is what I, you know, which what we like hearing that part, because it's important. We want to hear those milestones, but it's great to hear these huge moments that might have been huge and then hear you say it wasn't. But I feel like it might have been, once you realize that that's not the end, it's kind of empowering. It's kind of like, you know, it's like you took a couple blows and then you were just like, all right, I'm still here. Let's keep going. You know, it's, they say success is moving from, you know, one failure to another, not like not losing any enthusiasm. So it sounds like that was a learning moment.
That's the best definition of success I've ever heard. It's so true. You just bounce back from failures until you've like, you know, and eventually they build you into something great, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny because that whole America's Got Talent moment, although it seemed like, you know, it could have been the end for me. And it was something that at first I was like, I hope that gets buried on the internet and no one ever sees it. Like, I hope that no one ever brings that up again. And then it turned into one of the catalysts for my career, because when I released my first album and I started to be, you know, successful, you know, and I was trying to find press opportunities as this brand new little artist, like YouTuber, my publicists were trying to get me stuff, but then they would find out, oh wait, you know, the different outlets would be like, oh wait, she was on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
And they told her she was awful and she still made it. And she like proved them wrong. We love that story. Suddenly it was like a story of like that underdog.
Yeah.
And so that was the entire press that like promoted my first moment. My first album was like, they loved that I was told I could never do it, and I did. And it endeared a lot of fans to me who felt similar, you know. So in hindsight, something that I wished that I could forget and I wished I could bury and I wish that no one would ever find ended up being a really important part of my story. And also, like, even personally, a growing moment that was huge for me and empowering for me. So, but yeah, anyways, what you were talking about was YouTube.
Yeah.
And I think the whole YouTube thing is, you know, I almost have to take people back, you know, to like 2010, 2011, and remind everybody that like YouTube wasn't like a thing back then like it is now. It was a emerging, budding thing that everyone thought of as a place for cat videos. Like, you know, like I didn't even understand you could have like your own channel until like 2010. And that like it was a network and you could build fans on it. Like, I don't know, it blew my mind. I actually went to like a YouTube workshop that a guy named Devin Graham was teaching. He was a YouTuber and he wanted to teach other filmmakers how to like present content on YouTube. And at the time I was in film school. So I found out about this and I went to like learn. And I remember as I sat there in the audience listening to this presentation about how to grow your brand on YouTube, of all things, the cat video place, you know, at this point I was pretty discouraged. I had gone back, you know, from America's Got Talent, and I was back at my college gigs feeling like, oh, I just don't know how long I can do this anymore. And as I sat in the audience, I knew in my heart that gut feeling that had been like, keep going, just keep going a little longer, keep going. It like came alive in me. And I knew, I was like, this is it. This is going to work for me. I know that this is not how I'm going to get my films out there. This is how I'm going to get my music out there. And so anyways, I went home that night and I took some of these little songs that I'd written and I started planning some videos for them. And like within a week, I had my first video up, and the rest is history.
So, I mean, that's amazing. And I feel like coming from and by the way, yeah, I just love how you explained how you can turn a moment like America's Got Talent into just part of your narrative. Now, like, it's like now all of a sudden you're not, and sometimes it comes with, you know, like you said, other baggage. And I don't know what kind of baggage you were talking about, but I know sometimes people are like, oh, they're just, you know, an American Idol person, or they're an America's Got Talent person. But instead you're like the scrappy person who they said, no, I'm not good. And then did it on your own. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's a little more punk rock. But then you see YouTube, and it's kind of one of those platforms where everything's on your shoulders. It doesn't really matter what some of these other people say. It's, you know, it's just the content you put out. So tell us a little bit about some of your early days in YouTube, your first video and how it kind of, how you started to generate momentum.
Yes. My first video was actually a collaboration with Devin Graham, the guy that taught the YouTube class, because like he talked all about networking and about collaborating. And so I went up to him after the class and I was like, I want to collaborate with you. Pretty bold move. But I showed him my music, and he was a cinematographer. That was his whole channel. And so anyways, we did a video where it was on his channel and it was on my channel. And so doing a collaboration as my first video helped me get automatic like viewers from his channel. And anyways, I ended up working with him a ton through the next few years. You know, he was an amazing cinematographer. I had lots of friends in film school because I was in film school at the time or had just gotten out of it. And so I had all these people that I could call upon to like help me film stuff, you know, I had all this knowledge of like editing and location scouting and producing and, I was pretty scrappy. I knew how to pull favors. I knew how to like say, you know, I knew how to give favors enough so that like I could get costumes made for free if I like modeled her other stuff to like, you know, like basically I would just, oh, can I record at your studio for free if I then play on this other track that you're working on, you know, like just trading favors. And I was super scrappy to get like really great content produced really early on for like, you know, basically nothing. Cause I didn't have anything at the time. And so, yeah, I started all these videos and I was shocked that I grew really fast. Like, cause I think that, you know, what everybody had told me before was a bad thing was that, you know, you're just so different, you know, like we don't know what to do with you. And this is what I was told when I would hit up record labels, when I was talking to talent agencies or, you know, agents, and they'd just be like kind of what I expressed earlier, where do you go for like a variety show act? And so something that was such a bad thing originally, suddenly in all the comments, I would see people sharing the video like crazy. And they would say, this is so different. This is so unique. I've never seen anything like this before. And it was because there was this girl dancing and playing the violin to electronic music. And yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, on YouTube, that was especially back in the day when it was starting, the biggest way to be seen was to do something different.
Yeah.
And so it just is kind of interesting how sometimes like the experts can tell you this, they can tell you that, they can tell you what works, what doesn't. But like at the end of the day, like my story never would have worked if I had done what everybody told me was right. If I had done things by the book, if I had waited for someone to believe in me rather than just finally being like, I'm going to just do this myself. And, you know, and also, like I said, you, like for anybody who's like chasing their career or trying to like be an artist or wondering what's next for them, you never know. Like I would have never known that YouTube would have been the thing that changed the game for me. And it, because it was a platform that really wasn't fully developed yet. You know, and I came onto it at the perfect time. And like, there will be new versions of TikTok and Instagram and this and that, like there's constantly new ones coming up. And so there's constantly a wave to catch where if you catch it at the right time, like that will be your version of what YouTube was for me.
Yeah. Do you remember a couple, and I love the wave analogy, you know, catching it at the right time, where I know you're based in Southern California. So we're a couple Southern Californians here, a couple Los Angelinos. But tell us, I would love to hear a couple stories about some of your first moments, because you have millions of views on YouTube. Do you remember a couple of big moments when you're like, whoa, this video got this many views or has this many comments or whoa, this, you know, a couple of your quote unquote viral moments that, because yes. you definitely are a viral artist on YouTube. You have millions of subscribers and views. So tell us a little bit about it.
You know, the first time that I had a video that was like viral was it was right before Zelda released their new game. And I decided I would do a Zelda medley, where I dressed up like Link. Like I even had the little elf ears put on, and I went out into the woods and played like this medley of Zelda tunes. And I released it the same weekend that the game came out. And so
genius. Speaking of waves and catching them at the right moment.
Right?
I mean, that's sometimes. Just like, I mean, like piggybacking off just huge cultural moments like that, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that was, again, something I learned from Devin. You know, he's like, find current things. Like, what are people going to be searching? And like, follow that. And so I thought, well, you know, because also being a violinist, like it was just hilarious to me how YouTubers, not as much now, but back in the day, it was like anytime a new song would come out from like Taylor Swift or, you know, Katy Perry, one of the big artists, every YouTube musician would try to cover it first to catch that wave, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, well, gosh, I play the violin, so I can cover things that like other people can't cover, like Zelda, you know, or like all these gamer things or movie soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah.
It allowed me to kind of have my own waves to catch and my own niche, I guess. But
did
I
you
remember,
ever do any Game of Thrones stuff or anything like that?
I did.
I knew. I mean, I'm thinking. Oh yeah, medieval times. It kind of has like, you know, got the classical sound. So that's another huge cultural thing.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, this Zelda medley did like really, really well. And I remember just being like, "Whoa!" It was the first time I was posted on like all these Reddit pages and like, you know, the cover of YouTube and like all this stuff. So that was a big moment for me, and a lot of people still to this day are like, I found you through your Zelda video, or you're the you know, the girl in the woods with the ears, like so. And then the other one was was my biggest moment for sure, especially because it was a song that was an original song. It was a song I'd written, and it was like the style that I wanted to do, which is so important that you don't just get your viral moments through like, you know, some random TikTok dance that you're like, well, yeah, it got 50 billion views, but like, that's not my dance. It's not my song. It's not my brand. Like I was, so it's important to realize, for me, it was really important that I have you know, something that I was mine. I wanted to have a viral moment with something that I created that was my sound and, you know, the artist I wanted to be. And I made this song called Crystallize, and I really was into dubstep at the time. I was like a huge Skrillex fan. And so I remember I wanted to make a dubstep song that like the dubstep community would respect, but also that my grandmother would think was beautiful.
Which, that's a mission.
Quite the mission.
Yeah.
And that's why I wrote a super melodic, like, and I remember I played it for my grandma who was, and she liked it. But also I remember I was so nervous to release this one. And I remember, it's interesting. I spent months working on this song because I kept putting it in the trash because I couldn't figure it out. I was like, dubstep just isn't meant for violin. And so I would like put it in my trash bin. And then I'd already paid for it though. I like, at that time I would pay the producer before we'd write the song. And so I'd already paid for this track. So I kept pulling it out of the trash and being like, you know, I'd write a new melody and it would not be good either. And I'd just put it to the side again. And so anyways, after months, I finally found my melody. And anyways, that video got 1 million views in one day, which at the time, I mean, that's still like a crazy feat for me, but at
crazy
the time,
feat for anybody. Yeah. Anybody.
Any artist. But at the time, like I was pretty small. I had like 100,000 subscribers, I think, you know? And so that was like massive. And I remember as I sat there the next morning, you know, 24 hours later, looking, I woke up to it and was like, what just happened? And I knew in that moment, I was like, I think my life just changed. And sure enough, it had, like shortly thereafter, like is when I did my first show and realized, oh my gosh, I can tour. Like, and you know, it kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. I was about to say that. So you kind of, so all of a sudden you got 1 million views after one day of posting a video. And so then did you then start working with different people? Were you like, okay, I want to book like a, you know, I know people are going to show up now. If I, you know, play a show, it's not going to be an empty courtyard at a college. Did you feel like, that gave you more leverage all of a sudden to talk to bookers and or were you booking your own shows?
Was booking my own shows at the time. And I mean, pretty much I was playing events. Like I would get hired for like a corporate gig at this point in my career or, you know, so again, it was always playing for people who had no idea who I was. And they would be like eating their dinner at a corporate event as some violin girls over there playing. And they're just like, that's interesting. And so when that video went viral, I had the courage to book my first show. And it actually was someone reached out to me and I didn't have an agent or anything. But someone reached out to me and was like, hey, I work at Webster Hall in New York City. Like, we would love to have you play. And I said yes to it. And then all of a sudden realized, oh my gosh, it's on me to sell tickets. I don't know if I can sell a ticket. I was like, I know people will click on the video to watch it, but like, would they leave their home? Would they buy a ticket and go to a, I don't know if I just really wasn't sure if that would translate. So I was terrified that nobody would buy tickets. So I made sure to post a video like 2 weeks before to announce, you know, like that then had like a link to all the tickets. And anyways, it ended up selling out. And I just remember that feeling of being on stage and saying, for example, like, I'm gonna play my next song. It's called Spontaneous Me. And they would all like cheer, you know, they get excited because they knew the song.
Yeah.
And that was a new concept for me. And I remember being backstage before it started and they started like chanting my name. And I just, I looked at these band members that I had just met that night, or the day before. We had a, like all day practice. Like I'd never met these guys. I just hired some random musicians and they were just like, who are you? Yeah. I was like, this is new. I was like, this has never happened before. And, you know, and it was just a huge moment for me. And after that came, you know, I got a booking agent that night because I invited agents to the show to try to get a booking agent. And, you know, and then it all became so much easier once it wasn't just like me doing everything myself. And those guys that were my random bandmates backstage ended up being my band, like, you know, band members, my best friends for like, you know, forever.
Yeah. That's an epic story. I love that story. And yeah, that people chanting your name at a sold out show will definitely get you some attention from bookers. So Lindsay, I wish we could talk longer, but I know you're a busy woman. You got other interviews to get to. So before we ask you our final question, I did just want to mention everybody to check out your new single, Lose You Now. And it just came out in January. And I wish we could talk a little bit about it because I know there's a very emotional story to it.
Let's talk about it a little bit. We can spend a little longer.
Okay. So please tell me about it because I I was listening to it and I was getting a little choked up listening to it because last year I had a little health scare with my father. And I just, you know, parents, you know, losing a parent is so rough. So just the thought of it for me, thankfully, it wasn't the time, but just the thought of it was, you know, so difficult. And I know you went through something similar recently and was part of the inspiration for this song. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I lost my dad to cancer, 4 years ago. And then also my best friend a year prior, who was one of my bandmates that I met at that very first show. And so, you know, he became my best friend for like the 4 years that we toured the world together and, you know, and he passed away very suddenly. And so, you know, within a year, I lost two of the most important, you know, people in my life, like out of my top five, you know, and, you know, that was just devastating. And it changed my beliefs a little bit though. I've always believed in, you know, God. I've always believed in, you know, that there's a plan for us. And I've always believed in angels, but suddenly after having people that I love so much being over there, it just became more personal and it became, I guess, like tangible is the best way I can describe it. It's almost like I just felt a connection to the other side. And so my belief in angels just suddenly was so much more powerful. And I started really believing that they're with us all the time, you know, that we've got guardian angels. And I've had experiences that have just been so tender and so sweet that have made me realize that they're not far and that they're guiding me. And so yeah, I ask them for help all the time. And I like literally just sometimes when I'm scared or nervous or like overwhelmed, I just like imagine the power that's around me that I can't see, but that if I focus, I can like feel it. And Lose You Now is about obviously losing someone, but it's more so about not losing them. It's about keeping them with us and holding on to the fact that like they're still with me and they're going to be with me and they're going to guide me and they're going to, and I've, like I said, I've had some beautiful experiences that have made me realize that our loved ones aren't far. And that's what the song's about.
It's a beautiful song. I was reading through the comments of the video on YouTube, I think it was, and you and just countless people just, you know, telling their stories, thanking you, you know, saying this song came at the right moment for them who had similar stories as you. So beautiful song. And it's great that you can touch so many people and make them know that, you know, you're feeling something similar to them, and, you know, comfort them in their similar moments. So Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us. It was an honor talking to you. You know, I don't even think we scratched the surface of how crazy successful you've become. So I'll just, you know, I'll remind everybody that, you know, of your platinum success, your millions and millions of streams and views and all of your success and your new single, it's great. So tell us, we like to end the interview by asking if you had one piece of advice for aspiring artists, what would it be?
It'd be stop doubting yourself, you know. Self-doubt is so powerful. It is the biggest detriment to any human. And I have to constantly, even now, tell myself that, like, just I'll sometimes listen to the voice inside my head and I'll hear what it's saying. I'll say, stop it. Stop doubting yourself. And I'll even say it aloud. Like, but, you know, it honestly, in the beginning, it was my belief in myself that made it possible for me to do all those things. All the, like, my career doesn't make any sense if I like actually dice it up and look at it. And I'm like, this makes absolutely no sense how it happened. Only reason it happened is because I believed it could. That's what allowed me to get up every time I was humiliated. That's what allowed me to keep going after sleeping in my car, is I could never have done that if I didn't believe that I could. I could never have done it if I was doubting myself all the time. So stop doubting yourself, believe that you can do it, and then you can get things figured out.